Welcome to Crime Suit Podcast. I'm your host, Kaylee Carter.
And I'm Hannah.
And this week we'll be discussing the downfall of one of Oregon's most influential politicians, a man who spent over 30 years developing his career, only to watch it crumble in an instant. This is the story of Neil Goldschmidt. Neil Edward Goldschmidt was born in Eugene, Oregon in 1940, and by all accounts was a natural-born leader. He was a student body president at the University of Oregon, graduating with a bachelor's degree in political science in 1963, before interning for Senator Neuberger in Washington, D.C. in 1964. By 1967, he had also earned a Juris Doctorate and began working as a legal aid lawyer in Portland. Goldschmidt's political career skyrocketed in the 1970s after he won a seat on the Portland City Council, eventually becoming the mayor of Portland in 1973. He is widely credited with opening up the city's government to neighborhood activists and minorities, appointing women and African Americans in a city hall that had been dominated by an old boy network. During his mayoral campaign, he questioned the benefit of expanding the city's police force, preferring to direct resources to crime prevention. According to the Willamette Week, for 30 years he was Oregon's most successful and charismatic leader. But his career didn't stop there. In 1979, he became the 6th U.S. Secretary of Transportation under President Jimmy Carter. And in 1985, he successfully won his race as the 33rd Governor of Oregon. Neil Goldschmidt was the epitome of a successful, charismatic politician, which is why his sudden demise came as an incredible shock to all Oregonians when Nigel Jaquis, an investigative journalist with the Willamette Week newspaper, published an article exposing Goldschmidt as a child rapist. On May 11, 2004, Nigel Jaquis published an article in the Willamette Week newspaper entitled The 30-Year Secret, A Crime, A Cover-Up, and the Way It Shaped Oregon, which, for the first time, publicly detailed Neil Goldschmidt's long-term abusive relationship with his family's babysitter while he was mayor of Portland. Goldschmidt, who was married at the time, would sometimes hire a young teenager named Elizabeth Dunham to watch his two small children. But according to Elizabeth's cousin and more than a dozen of her friends, he used her for much more than babysitting. He would often take her down to her parents' basement, to hotels and to other private spots, and have sex with her. Neil Goldschmidt was 35 years old and mayor of the most populous city in Oregon when he began abusing 14-year-old Elizabeth. In the state of Oregon, sexual contact between an adult and a child under the age of 16 is classified as rape. But by 2004, when this information finally came to light, the statute of limitations had already passed.
Okay, so I've heard the phrase statute of limitations used a lot, but could you go ahead and just kind of explain more about what it means?
Yeah, so a statute of limitations is a law that outlines the maximum amount of time that people have to initiate legal charges, and it starts from the date when the alleged offense occurred. But the reason statute of limitations exists is to basically kind of close a door on a crime or a legal an offense. So basically people don't have to worry about being sued 60 years later for something. And normally statute of limitations is fine for a lot of like property type of crimes. But when it comes to sexual assault cases or crimes against people in that way, I think that statute of limitations does more harm than good.
Okay, so how is statute of limitations even decided?
The statute of limitations is decided state by state and depending on the crime, so it's different for each crime and depending on what state you're in. Elizabeth's abusive relationship with Mayor Goldschmidt lasted until 1978, before he became the Secretary of Transportation for President Jimmy Carter. Although Elizabeth had once been a straight-A student and class president, she dropped out of high school in her sophomore year. She earned a GED and took some classes at Portland State in the early 80s, but never graduated from college. She worked odd jobs, occasionally waitressing in downtown Portland, but according to her boyfriend at the time, Elizabeth had more ability and less confidence than anybody he had ever known. And if the childhood abuse from Mayor Goldschmidt wasn't enough, Elizabeth was the victim of a rape a second time when a stranger abducted her at knife point and forced her to drive them both back to her apartment, where he raped and taunted her for hours, threatening to kill her. Elizabeth's attacker was soon found and arrested, but it was during his criminal trial and Elizabeth's subsequent counseling sessions that the judge learned that she had a history of childhood sexual abuse. Judge Charles Johnson at this point had presided over rape and murder trials for 20 years. Of Elizabeth, he said, "I have never seen a victim who was so completely psychologically and mentally, emotionally destroyed. She will never be well again." Meanwhile, Goldschmidt was finishing his second year as the governor of Oregon. He had reformed the state's workers' compensation system and was recruiting high-tech giants, who today make up Oregon's Silicon Forest. Elizabeth was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress syndrome, was unable to work, and turned to alcohol and cocaine for comfort. She was arrested 9 times between 1991 and 1994. According to police reports, she was noted as a menace to herself and others. Finally, in 1994, nearly 20 years after Goldschmidt began abusing her, Elizabeth decided to hire a lawyer. Some say she was emboldened by the recent coverage of the sexual harassment claims against Senator Bob Packwood. Elizabeth's lawsuit was never filed. Instead, within 3 months, Goldschmidt and his attorneys agreed to pay Elizabeth a settlement of approximately $250,000. After attorney's fees, she received only $30,000 in cash and an annuity that paid her $1,500 a month for 10 years. In addition, she would receive a lump sum payments of $50,000 in 2005, 2010, and 2015. The one large string attached? Elizabeth must never disclose Goldschmidt's abuse. In November of 2003, Goldschmidt led a highly visible and successful campaign opposing the purchase of Portland General Electric. 2 weeks later, he announced he would head a group that would buy PGE. By February 2004, the Willamette Week newspaper began reporting on Goldschmidt's consulting firm, but they kept hearing whispers of Goldschmidt's past. Most involved affairs with adult women, but a few sources also mentioned a young girl. In April, two reporters from the newspaper decided to interview Elizabeth in person. She agreed to meet with them, but her hands began to shake when they asked her about Goldschmidt. She acknowledged having been abused as a child, but repeatedly denied that Goldschmidt was the perpetrator. According to several sources, Goldschmidt hired a private aide named Robert Birchall to help, in the words of one source, handle Elizabeth. For example, in 1986, when Elizabeth moved into a shared apartment off Northwest 23rd, one of her roommates accused her of stealing her credit card and spending almost $1,000 at Meyer & Frank. When that roommate was interviewed by Willamette Week newspaper in 2004, she said she got a call from a man named Bob Birchall who agreed to pay the debt. Birchall's job was to keep her from Neil, says one source. If she had problems, she should bring them to Bob. Elizabeth kept her end of the bargain. She suffered silently, keeping Neil Goldschmidt's secret. Once the news broke, Goldschmidt's portrait was removed from the Oregon State Capitol building. He resigned from his various appointments, but Elizabeth's payments stopped coming. Their agreement became moot, and she struggled to pay for her psychiatric medications. Elizabeth died in 2011 at the age of 49. One of the many medical professionals who treated Dunham over the past 4 decades says this of Goldschmidt: "He took everything from her except her life. And now that is gone as well."
Okay, so one of the biggest things that bothers me about Elizabeth's case is that we know that her mother and several of her friends knew about the abuse the entire time that it was going on, and nobody did anything to stop it. Why would they do that?
I think plain and simple, everyone who claimed to love Elizabeth failed her. Her mother failed her, her friends failed her, anyone who knew about this failed her. And we know that Elizabeth's mother, Pamela, worked for Neil Goldschmidt, and so it's possible that she had a motive to sweep this under the rug because she didn't want to deal with it, and it could have affected her career or maybe Neil's career and the things that they were doing for Oregon and Portland. So if it was because of those reasons, if they didn't do anything for those reasons, I think that's incredibly selfish and short-sighted, but I don't know of any other reason. So either way, it's shitty.
I also don't really think that this is super uncommon. I can even remember being 12 and 13 years old myself, like being as young as middle school. And I distinctly remember there was a girl in my 7th grade class. So we were 12 years old and she had a 19-year-old boyfriend. And at the time, I was not mature enough and I didn't really fully understand how predatory that entire relationship was. And so it's possible, I think, that some of Elizabeth's friends were probably in the same mindset, that they didn't understand. They just thought, oh, he's the mayor. Like, he's this cool, popular guy. Everyone loves him. And he's showing an interest in her. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with it. Maybe they thought it was weird. Like, oh, he's pretty old. but I don't think they recognized how predatory and definitely illegal this all was.
Yeah, and even if young kids did know that this was wrong or wasn't right, like, who's the first person you go to when something like this happens? I think you go to your parents. And if your parents don't do anything, then what do you do? Because I had a friend in middle school who's being abused by an adult, and she confided in me. And the first thing I said was, oh my God, we have to tell your parents. And she said, they already know. And so what do you do at that point when the parents already know and they're not doing anything about it? As a young child, I didn't know what steps to take after that because their parents weren't present.
The other thing that really bothers me about this case is, I think just at its core, I don't understand why Neil Goldschmidt would start this relationship with Elizabeth. Like, I understand that maybe he found her attractive, even as young as 13 or 14, like, I know that that's a thing. But everything we know about Neil is that he was very smart. Like, he was well-educated. He obviously understood. He understood what it took to rise to the top. He understood social dynamics. There's no way that he didn't know that this was wrong. And I have a hard time believing that he didn't know that eventually this would all come to light. So I just have trouble understanding why he did this, or maybe whether or not he even was thinking.
I think this situation right here, number one, is relatively common. And number two is a symptom for a patriarchal society, honestly. The way we teach boys and now men, as they grow into men, to treat women, to think about women, and to view young girls, like, teenagers are extremely sexualized. Mostly, we're taught from a young age that teenage girls are for sexual consumption. Women and young girls are taught that men will objectify them as soon as they come into puberty. And we start policing what teenage girls wear around puberty. And we teach young boys and grown men that young girls are irresistible and that wanting teenage girls, is just natural and part of being a man. Like, for God's sake, the most popular category of porn is literally called just teen girls.
I 100% agree. Not only is this super common, and I think it is a societal issue, it brings to mind a very similar case, and I'm just thinking of one. I'm sure that there's like a million more, but this reminded me of another politician from Alabama who was in the news back in 2017. Do you remember Roy Moore? He was running, I think, to conserve his spot in the U.S. Senate, and there were several sexual assault allegations against him from adult women, but also I think there were several who said they were as young as 14, and so I don't think that this is uncommon. Like, if we can think of Neil Goldschmidt and we can think of Roy Moore off the top of our heads, like, there's probably countless others who aren't just politicians, but other celebrities, right? Like, how many celebrities can you think of who have not even just allegations, but have proven to be sexual predators to young girls?
No, you're exactly right. And hasn't that kind of been the theme of the past, like, I don't know, like 5 to 7 years, like the Me Too movement? We're discovering that the celebrities and the politicians and the people that we loved in the media, or people with power and influence that we loved, are actually terrible people, or they're actually abusers, or they're actually racist, or they're super sexist. Like, it's been a common theme over at least the past 5 years that millennials have been finding out that people we thought we liked and thought we knew weren't who we thought they were.
At the conclusion of our episode, I wanted to actually quote Elizabeth herself. One of the things she says could have made a difference in the way her life turned out is that she wished her parents and those around her had paid more attention to what was going on and helped her as she was being abused. So her plea to parents is quoted as this: parents need to be vigilant and notice behavior changes. They need to notice the appearance of people. If you give your kid a cell phone, instruct them about the dangers. Talk with them, have family dinners, and make sure you know what's going on in their lives. She hoped that her family would understand why she wanted to speak out, and she hoped they would understand she was tired of being portrayed only as Goldschmidt's victim, or a throwaway person. She didn't want to be the little nothing person that nobody ever thought was worth paying attention to or protecting. And she hopes that parents everywhere are paying attention to their children and making them feel loved and heard.
You can help protect your children and the people you love from sexual abuse with the resources at www.nsvrc.org. This website can help educate on signs and symptoms of sexual abuse, how and where to report it, how to help survivors, and how to prevent sexual abuse. Crime Soup listeners, my chowder chums, check us out on Instagram at crime_soup and TikTok at Crime Soup Podcast. Tell us what you think about this case. As always, thanks for listening and tune in next Tuesday for your next helping of delicious crime soup. Bon appetit!